Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today we discuss technical diagramming with systems architect Maya. Let's go. First question. You've spent 10 hours slogging over a sequence diagram that should have taken 5. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board. And if I'm being honest, Miro would probably cut that time down by half. You know, with its AI tools and ready-to-go templates.
Next, your diagrams become so bulky, it's more complex than the solar system. But all it takes is a few clicks and...
It's Miro. I've used those technical shape packs way too many times, and stuff is just digestible on its infinite online canvas.
Now, the final question. Everyone's brought in, but you have to make all these tasks all the way over in Jira. But wait, it's done. Is it...
Miro, easy with its two-way Jira sync. Easy to plot dependencies. Everyone always knows what's up.
And she's done it.
Join over 60 million people creating technical diagrams without workflow glitches. Get your first 3 boards for free at Miro.com. That's Miro.com.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It would be a war spot, eh?
On goes Paul. People might yet win it here for Wolves. Blast in the shot. What a goal!
Hello and welcome to today's episode of Wolves Fancast, part of the 90 Min Network. It's me, Rich Hobbs, as always, to talk about the dramatic, I was going to say draw, it was a defeat, wasn't it, to Forest last night in the Carabao Cup. And we're also going to turn our minds back onto the league with the upcoming game against West Ham. Joining me this evening, we've got Tom, Jiffo and Pricey. Pricey, how are you feeling at the moment? Because you made the trip to Forest in the monsoon weather across the A38 and lived to tell the tale.
And you're factually correct as well. I did choose to go the A38 way and not the motorway way.
It's the easiest way to get to the East Midlands. I say it every time and I stand by it.
I didn't trust the M6, to be honest. If something happens on there, you're screwed and you can't, nothing you can do about it. Oh man, I mean, I'm a bit better than I was last night or straight after the game, but I'm just so disappointed. I really am. Maybe it is a lack of sleep from getting back late, but I've felt a bit deflated all day, to be honest. I don't know. It was just a complete missed opportunity for me. That was, I thought we were the better team. It was against beatable opposition, you know, they were there for the taking. And I guess, you know, typical Wolves fashion, we've let an opportunity pass us by. Not for the first time, and it certainly won't be the last, I'm sure. But after the game, I went for a drink and I was in a pub. And me and my mate were the only two Wolves fans in there. And it was like Notts Forest Party Central, and it just wasn't a great place to be while I was waiting for the car park to clear out. It was just horrible. Tempered only slightly when they pulled the draw out the hat and it was Man United and not like Southampton that they got in the next round.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I say, speaking of a party in Nottingham, I only saw it about half an hour before recording, but the scenes in the Forest dressing room after the game, I just about got over yesterday.
Oh.
And then I saw some celebrating. It was just, I had Jesse Lingard.
Lingard dancing forward.
Didn't
get on the pitch.
No. It irritated me. It made me feel like a cranky old man, which I appreciate I am, but it shouldn't make me feel like that. Let's talk about the game, because I think it was an interesting one from sort of start to finish. And I don't quite know if Lopetegui got it. Well, he didn't get it right. But we'll start with the lineup because it was the first time he kind of went for the back three to start with Johnny, Kilman and Toti. Collins had the night off as Kilman did against Liverpool in the Cup. And of course, Neves also was on the bench as well. Got a rest for 45 minutes. Tom, what was your reaction to the lineup? Because it's on paper, it looks a bit disjointed to me.
Actually, I think on paper for me, I wasn't too bothered. I thought it looked all right, but it was because I thought it was going to be four at the back because of the personnel that was there. You couldn't really tell whether it was going to be four at the back or five. And it was, I think it, actually on paper, it wasn't too bad. I wasn't overly pleased that Jimenez was playing, but the rest of them, you know, I wasn't too fussed. But unfortunately, I think it was the system that was our downfall ultimately. And it didn't suit too many of our players, if that makes sense. So Johnny is just not a centre half. The further to the right side of the pitch he goes, the worse he gets for me. Moutinho, he hasn't got the legs to play in a midfield two anymore, and Guedo is shite on the wing, and it's been proven time and time again. And if it happens again, something's seriously wrong with the coaching teams. They pick him anywhere near the width, at wide again. It just, he's not that player.
Yeah, Jeffo, what were your sort of thoughts? Because I completely see where Tom's coming from, but when you look at the lineup, the official Wolves lineup kind of had it as that back five, but very easily interchangeable to a back four with Johnny left back. And it does, like, I feel that a 4-4-2 would have suited some of those players a bit better. And Johnny is a right centre half.
Yeah.
Where do you stand on that at the moment?
I just echo what Tom says with that. The more he gets towards that right back, it's just the worse he plays. And I think you're right, exactly right when you say that, Tom. And the thing is, we saw him play left back the previous game, and he played well. And the performance that he put in was fine. It was more like the Johnny that we'd seen in the past. But talking about, you mentioned Guedes, you mentioned Jimenez. You put in two or three players who are passengers within a whole team, and then it's going to be difficult to carry the whole, to carry your team to a result. These players, they haven't put anything in the last couple of months. We haven't seen anything from them, especially, Jimenez. Okay, yeah, he's been injured and in and out of the team, but Guedes, since he's come in and actually been involved, he's probably had one or two good games. And I think probably one of his better games was in a friendly against Empoli, which says a lot about his time here so far.
Yeah, I know, Adam, you're not a huge fan of Guedes, but you're right, Jeffo, that a couple of passengers and a few players off their game who aren't quite fit in the system, you're going to get not quite found out, but you're going to struggle. And I think we did first half. Not really. It took us a long time to find any sort of rhythm. What were your sort of thoughts in terms of, I guess, the opening proceedings? Because it felt very early on that this ain't working.
Yeah, it was a strange one, the first half, because I was confused. I didn't see the team line up until like about 15 minutes before the game. I was going in, and I to be honest, I couldn't make head or tail of it, of who was playing where. So I was finding that out as the game was going on, and we just looked a bit just unsure of ourselves and a bit all over the place. And we're up against the Forest side, who are probably only just starting to find out something that resembling their best team after, like, the amount of players they brought in. They've naturally took quite a while to find out, after all, that the cast of thousands they brought in, what their best team will be. But we just seem to be a bit all over the place. Passes are astray. I don't know if the weather didn't help, but certainly the second half it didn't. But passes just going astray everywhere. we just seemed to be a bit lacking in focus in what we were doing. But then it was a bit strange that we then proceeded to go on to have the best two chances of the game, or well, certainly the first half anyway, with Hwang and Jimenez. I watched it back again earlier to just refresh my memory of it. And Jimenez, he's got to score that as he's gone through. He's got to score it. I don't know whether he showed too much of it to Henderson, and Henderson is a good keeper, to be fair to him. So you might not put it past him that it was a cracking save. But when I watched it live at the time, I just thought it's got to be rolled in. This just got to be. And I think we were kind of under the cosh at the moment at that time. And I just thought it's another chance that it just goes begging. And that kind of summed up our first half really as well. And I felt, certainly from set pieces, we just looked vulnerable. So, like, well, I was right in front of the goal first half, and I was watching them all quite closely from corners. And was it the Everton game where Breno was marking Mina?
Yeah.
When Mina scored. Well, again, Bolly is clearly going to be like Forrest's main guy from set pieces. Kilman's not nowhere near him. Someone should just be grabbing Kilman and just gluing him to Bolly, saying at corners, you just do not leave him, do not leave his side. But when you watch the goal back, you know, Bolly's, I can't remember who's on him now. It might be Samad. I can't remember who was on him. But either way, it's the wrong person to have on Bolly, the main target man from the set piece. And just, again, we're left scratching our heads. And I don't know whether, like, we've adopted some sort of weird zonal marking or something from corners. But for me, there's just some basics there that we just didn't really adhere to first half.
It did seem very much written in the stars that either Bolly or Gibbs White were going to be involved in this game. And both of them were. But yeah, you're right. We looked suspect from corners and set pieces. And never said anything near our goal, which isn't really a good place to be. But I know, Tom, you were frustrated from the Everton game when we defended badly from it. And do you think it's something, I don't know, once is a one-off, two becomes a bit of a pattern? Do you think it's something that we really need to work on? Because, yeah, we've all seen Willy Bolly play. We know he's good. We know he's solid from a set piece. And, you know, if he's out, I think it might have been Semedo. But, yeah. Frustrating, isn't it?
Yeah, I think they had a very specific plan from set pieces as well, Forrest. They just seemed to plug at everyone basically in the 6-yard box, and they hit the near post every single time. So they obviously thought there was a weakness there, or they'd seen something in us. So other teams are picking up on certain traits now, which is never a good sign. So yeah, we didn't get the first ball, and then it was just a bit carnage after that, wasn't it? I think, to be fair to John, it's just hit Johnny, to be fair. I don't think he probably could react in time, to be honest. And then obviously it's the easiest tapping of all for Bolly. I'll give him a bit of a shout out for not celebrating. You know, I didn't think he'd ever give it the big one, but, you know, we've seen another certain player on the pitch who we won't talk about just yet, but he was the exact opposite of that. So I've got to give Bolly a bit of respect for not celebrating.
It was the right level of celebration for me. Willian scored for Fulham tonight against Chelsea. And I'm not a fan of the non-celebration where, you know, they put the apology, where they put their hands up.
Yeah.
I hate it. Mm. Hate it, because it's like making a big deal of it. Whereas Willy Bolly, you could see he was smiling. You could see he was happy. But he wasn't making a big show of it. And I think that, I don't know, his time at Wolves ended a bit funny, didn't it, Jaffo, in the end? Which, considering what a strong servant he was for the club, and he was, you know, one of the best players in the Championship, you know, I'd argue he's one of the best defenders the Championship / Wolves have seen at that tier.
Yeah, definitely.
But it kind of felt like we had a proper goodbye. Does that seem weird to say?
Yeah, I think it was, like you say, it's a little bit strange. I think with him getting ill during the COVID seasons, and him getting COVID and him being in and out of the team, kind of put a dampener and, you know, it was a bit of a damp squid to the end of his career, because he was a fantastic servant for the club. Like you said, he was brilliant in the Championship, and, you know, we'll always remember that goal against Besiktas as well. And, you know, he was somebody who was enigmatic, you know, part of that team who achieved so much under Nuno. And to see him go out the way he did here was disappointing. But he's only just starting to turn it on now for Forest in the last couple of games. And, you know, I'm happy for him as a player. And, you know, and like Tom says about, you know, he's shown some respect. It's nice because of he who shall not be named until later. He's almost like Voldemort, isn't he, now? But yeah, he big up for the respect because others haven't shown it.
Yeah, definitely. But one thing we do know about Lopetegui is, and it was fascinating seeing him throughout the half because he was bollocking players pretty much from minute one, which is not really a great sign. But he isn't afraid to make the changes. And you could argue that means he's not quite got it right from the start. But, you know, I know you're not a fan of the ghost in Guedes, Adam. But bringing on Neves at half-time is a real, like, no. We need to get something sensible on here. and again, you know, making another two subs on the hour mark with Kuna and Podence coming on as well. Really kind of proactive subs instead of just dawdling on it.
Yeah, I mean, I think there is an element of him having to rotate right now. What with the amount of games we've got coming up, is that he's actually doing a bit of element of rotation just to keep the players from burnout. But Guedes, again, is just another, frankly, I thought that was a disgusting performance from him yesterday and not for the first time. Everything he tried and did was just terrible. His body language and his attitude just like screams like he's been forced to sign for us against his will. I think he's been sat there in the darkened room, much like mine, with this light in his face and just shining his face that you will sign for Wolves. Or someone's just promised him that Wolverhampton is like some sort of sun-kissed paradise and he's got here and realised it's not and he doesn't like it and wants to go home. But I don't know. I know he's consistently played in a position that's not his, but if that's where we're always going to play him, then just get rid of him. Just sell him. Because there's no point. There's no point in being here. He's not offered had anything in all of the time that he's been here. Short time that he's been here, really, despite the odd where he's popped up with the odd goal, even if they're given to him, you know, he's not doing it. It's just a bit of a waste of a shirt space at the moment, to be honest. And you know, it's not the first time I've said that, probably won't be the last until something drastic happens or he moves on. He's like, for this season, he's my new Trincao. He's like that hill I'm prepared to die on. Well, just continually say that he's not very good. You don't want to denigrate your own, of course you don't, but what else can, you know, he's not even give a glimpse of anything otherwise. So yeah, he was terrible. So I wasn't surprised, to be honest, that he was subbed at half time. I thought maybe Adama would come on at half time, to be honest, but that came later. And to be honest, I know the game kind of took a bit of a tech turn as the second half went on, and you can pinpoint that from the seconds that Podence come on. When Podence got subbed on, he was like, I don't know what had happened. I know he left the boot in a couple of times on some Forest players, but they put Podence and about half the Forest team like hated each other for the rest of the game. They must not like, other than him, I know he deliberately left his foot in, or it seemed like he left his foot in on Forest player, and that got the backs up. But for the game took a really bit of a nasty turn. You can trace it back to when Podence come on. But it was lively. It was really helped us get push on in the second half.
Yes, there was, I think he was the Franz Ferdinand moment in terms of, because it did become a proper ding-dong. That second half, and you could feel it like every possible moment that, you know, it was a powder keg about to explode, wasn't it? And, you know, obviously there was stuff after the game as well, but you could feel it. You could feel it brewing, and I'm gonna lie, I kind of liked that. It did kind of, it felt a bit of a throwback, in a way that actually, you know, this is like two teams who really want this and aren't afraid to show it. Mm-hmm. And it did give me a weird amount of satisfaction, because it did feel almost, I don't know, not it didn't feel like it was in the championship, but it felt just two teams who were willing to, you know, have a ding dong if they needed to. For me, and opponents is good for that. He is, but Jimenez did get a goal, and you know, we don't get to say that often, but great movement, great work from Kuna as well, who I think slowly but surely seems to be embedding himself in this team as a highly technical quality player who, you know, it feels like we're breeding him in slowly but surely, but he's doing everything right so far.
Yeah, definitely. I think he needs to start games now.
Yeah,
he's clearly our best centre forward. I mean, that isn't even up for debate. He plays with his head up, and it's just like a basic thing, but he just plays with his head up. He's like, this isn't a dig at Adama, but he's like the opposite to Adama in that, you know, Adama gets his head down and just like hits it into an area where Kuhn is, everything's, you know, pretty precise. I can't remember too many misplaced passes. He chases around a lot. You know, he's sort of really endeared himself, it seems, already to the, you know, talk about the penalty shootout later, I'm sure, but he's really endearing himself to the fans with what he's doing on the pitch, what he's saying off the pitch. He's the like, sort of the anti, the Guedes, you know, dissing show, but he's like the opposite to Guedes in that, you know, he runs around, Guedes and the clock is bothered, Kuna looks like he's up for everything. Apparently he was a bit involved in the melee at the end as well, which, to be honest, I quite like. You know, he's already, you know, backing up, you know, the team he plays for, and that's something you got to really like. But brilliant assist. It was a great move, the goal. I mean, watch it back. It was really good. It shows Nunez's quality as well, actually driving from midfield. You know, a quick 1-2, he's passed the man. We're on the defence.
It was Huang, he did the 1-2.
Yeah, Huang. I thought Huang had a decent game, to be fair. Even that chance he missed first off, he's hit it into the ground. I actually think Huang had a really good. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. he's kicked the ball. That's a tick in the Huang box already. But genuinely, I thought Huang had a decent game last night, and it was a really nice flick around the corner for Nunez. And yeah, really good team goal, well worked.
No, definitely.
We've seen the best of Nunez, aren't we?
Yeah,
he's starting to come to the fore now.
Yeah, he looks the player we signed.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's funny what happens when you play like this £40 million player in his best position, isn't it?
Yeah,
exactly. It's like, you know, like, I know Jafo, you've been screaming out for it. But Kuna, I'm not going to say he looks a real deal, but it's an art profession to have someone who's good up front. I ran out of like descriptive words there, but someone who just can... I know he can break the line, he can link up the play, even for the goal. You know, obviously he has to go out wide for it, which isn't necessarily where you want your centre forward. But again, great, just did everything that you needed to. Kill a ball across the 6-yard box as well, set it up.
Yeah, I think it's just something so different that we've had over the last couple of years. I know Jimenez, probably you could compare the two, and Jimenez was probably very similar back before the injury, you know, and he was somebody who would pull wide as well and was involved in assists and was a very, you know, very creative footballer. But now, that like the last sort of like 18 months, we've been very static up front, and, you know, we've been screaming for somebody like this, you know. He's like how Jimenez was, how Jota was. He's something different. And when you've got that X factor that he's got, you know, you're going to create danger, you're going to create chances, and I know anyone could have scored that. They could have wheeled Steve Bullett with in a wheelchair, and he'd have tapped it in. It was that easy. But that says a lot about Cunha and what he's done on the pitch, and say props to Huang and Nunez for the build-up. It was fantastic, but that ball was just sumptuous, and was put on a plate for Jimenez, and if that's what we're going to see from Cunha, then, you know, Jimenez, if he's going to play games, he's going to get goals, and Diego Costa will get goals eventually. So, and that's how we're going to see it. You know, if they bring somebody else in, brilliant. But we've got somebody who's going to create chances now, and that's what we've missed. And this sort of player creates a little bit of chaos, and not just within that moment, within another moments of the game. He's got personality, like you're saying. But Tom says he's got personality, and you can see it. Just to little snapshots throughout the game, and little snapshots that you see through YouTube and you know, backroom things. It's just that little bit of life that brings to the club, and it seems to have lifted everyone. And it's similar to Diego Costa. Diego Costa's great back scenes, but this guy is affecting the pitch, and that's the key thing, is what we need, in somebody who can go on the pitch and create something different.
Yeah, 1,000%. And all the things that I'd seen about him previously, and what I'd watched, like, obviously he doesn't have the highest goal return, but you can see that he is sort of that catalyst that all of a sudden he's just dragging everyone. You know, if he's given that extra bit of pace, everyone else has to move at his pace as well, and he's dictating some of those movements, which could only be good for Wolves. But it was a bit back and forth second half, and I think Wolves had chances, and we did dominate second half more, and we did sort of find our rhythm when, you know, we bring on a few more subs as well. Traore comes on as well, and bring on Joe Hodge. But we get to full time, of course, and it's the penalties, because there's no extra time in the cup, which was a bit of a strange sensation. The kind of just go straight to penalties. I was half relieved of it, but you do have that sort of dread, regardless of what it is, when it comes to penalties. And part of me was pretty confident going into it, because Sarr's a pretty decent penalty stopper, and you know, I know Jimenez had been subbed off, but Neves has been reliable from spot the last 12-18 months. Podence is solid from, he's taken a couple of penalties and shootouts and things like that. So I was feeling pretty confident. How were you guys feeling going into it? Because obviously we know how it ended, but
I wasn't as confident as you. I think Henderson's Henderson's got a good record, hasn't he, to be fair?
Yes. In hindsight, I didn't realise he saved like about 14 career penalties or something silly for what a young goalkeeper.
What I will say is, to the Forest fans, they knew how to stir up an atmosphere when they got to penalties. Mm. So we were happy that they were doing it down our end to start off with. But for each penalty, the crowd, the whole stadium, it seemed, were getting behind Henderson, and they made a lot of noise. They made it like quite a, you know, raucous shootout. They were getting right behind Henderson. He was, I think, certainly for Pedence's penalty, as per the aforementioned beef that Pedence was getting in with the entire Forest team, Henderson went like a level above to try and put Pedence off. You could tell he was like trying to lean forward, and just as he was going to like start his penalty take, you could see like he stepped forward and like started clapping at him to try and put him off. But yeah, they got right behind Henderson, that the home crowd did. I wasn't confident when it started, because Wolves and penalties are much like, Wolves and penalty shootouts are much like England and penalty shootouts. You know, we don't have too many successes, to be honest. And that only kind of exacerbated when Neves hit that first penalty, which is a bit of a shocker, to be honest. I've refused to watch back any of the spot kicks, but I just remember it being a pretty poor penalty, which is a shame, because I saved the first one. So I thought, okay, here we go. But then, you know, I thought this only counts if Neves can bury his. And I just thought, oh, shit, like that was not what we wanted at this point. Such a poor penalty from him.
Yeah, I think the Forest player who missed before him, it went the same side, but it was a much better shot/save from Sarr. Jimenez's wasn't quite near the corner. When we've seen a couple of other penalties, he's that he's scored this season, he's played with confidence, he's probably tucked him in the far post. And, you know, it is a game of inches when it comes to penalties. But I was going to say, we did recover and we did have some nice penalties. To say, I love Podence's penalty stance. Like, it's really short run-up and then just buries it top bins. Just perfect for me. And, you know, then you get the Forest centre-half, which I thought was, you know, interesting move, but he's, I guess, club captain who, you know, levers it, feeling that. And then we have Mr. Gibbs White, which is, you could hear the dog whistles and whatever, and the whistles happening. Then he does his triple jump, hop, skip and jump to the penalty. And how Saar didn't save that, I will never know, because it seemed like it floated in the air, the penalty, and just slipped through his hands at the last minute.
It was a difficult one, wasn't it? I think it was just the height of it. It was just probably slightly too high for him. But other than that, it wasn't really a great penalty from him.
And that was the last we heard of him.
And then, yeah, he didn't do anything else. He faded into non-existence. All the Forest fans, I don't know what they're talking about.
No.
I don't know that.
Genuinely, I've just realised we've not actually talked about the penalty incident as well, regarding Nunes, which we probably should. But I want to talk about Gibbs White, and I've got no issue with him doing that celebration. Genuinely, in my opinion, he's got his right. You've got a right to reply. If you're getting whistled at, and you get, you know, it wasn't like he was, you know, you're a wanker or whatever. He's getting put off to take his penalty. He scores it. Yeah, it was a bad penalty, and you probably should be humble, bro. But I do admire it, because actually, you know what? I've quietened you now. Still,
I don't know what everyone's. I understand it's because it's him, and you know we've been giving him abuse. Not since he's left Wolves, but even while he was at Wolves, he was getting abuse. I think people are being a bit overly precious, the fact that he's done something back. But I don't understand what Wolves fans are kind of expecting in a way, because if you are going to be at him 24/7, he's naturally going to do something if he scores against us. I mean, yeah, the penalty snuck in. I mean, jammy bastard. I really thought that Saar got that, to be honest. But obviously, he did. He had his little moments with the finger in the ears, and it just shows he's a bit of an immature attitude. He got so rattled by the fact that Kuna did it back to him. I was watching Gibbs White when that happened, and I saw him doing like a sarcastic clap, and I thought that was it. I thought he took it good natured, but then as Kuna was coming back to the halfway line, you could just see he was rattled and he started to try and get over to the Wolves players. And I thought, wow, that's really something so simple has like really, really got to him. But I mean, it's annoying that it's him, and you know, he scored the penalty and Forrest ultimately went through. But I don't have a massive issue with it, because as we said, you know, if fans are going to give him pelters on the pitch and 24/7 on Twitter, he's going to just doing a little gesture, really, it's fair game, to be honest. And I think there's quite a few, you know, certain type of fan who just like enjoys that sort of thing, enjoys that banter and like pantomime rivalry between players and fans. So I don't really have too much of an issue with it. It's annoying, don't get me wrong. It's really fucking annoying that, you know, I want to say got one over on us, because he didn't do anything in the game itself.
No,
just all his contribution was like sneaking a lucky penalty past Saar. But I'm not like some others who like embarrassing themselves on Twitter.
Isn't it more the after the result stuff though? Isn't it really compared to the actual penalty? That's a bit classless, really.
I think that what happened after the game did, like, I think that's what people got upset about, because it seems like, you know, for those who didn't see, Kuna scored directly after him and did exactly the same celebration to all, like, just turned the other way to do it to the Forest fans.
Yeah, thought, that was brilliant. That was,
yeah, cojones is what I'm going to say about it, you know.
Yeah, that was good.
And you say, like, he seemed to have got really wound up by it. And then after the game, you've won, you've gone through on penalties, you're in the semi final of a cup for the first time in ages, Forest. Why is your energy going towards it? Like, it should, like,
I'm not sure what the flashpoint was. I'm not sure what actually happened with that. Because obviously, I've not watched it back, and I didn't see what happened in real time. I just started kicking off. I'm not, if any of you guys know, but I don't know what the actual flashpoint was that started it all off. Whether it was Gibbs White or whether it was,
I wasn't there, so I don't know. And you only see little snippets and stuff. But I think he's basically after the win, he's rushed over to the Wolves fans and then done it, you know, again, which is a bit shite. And then I read it might have just been all like Chinese whispers and stuff, that it might have been Lopetegui that sort of went up to him and took a bit of effect, like he was one of the ones sort of saying, well, that's, you know, that's sort of not on. The stuff I've heard is like Totti's actually trying to break stuff up. I think it was Kuna and maybe Adama, I think, that he might have been having a bit of a ruckus with, as well as Lopetegui and the coaching staff. And then I think Totti's gone to separate it all, but then Gibbs White's turned on Totti at that point. And it's that classic, he's got that classic little man thing where he's like, hold me back type. He seemed to be, trying to get out a little bit more. The clip I've seen, it looked a little bit like that, to be honest.
Lots of clips of him walking away while pushing people, like, no, stop, whilst evading, you know, Toto Gomez, who's twice the size of him and who is, like, physically picking up human beings out of the way to get to him. I've been rattling my brains. I tweeted about it yesterday in regards to Joe Hodge, who missed the decisive penalty, who never quite looked comfortable from the spot.
Mm.
And whether it was the right thing to him be the fifth penalty taker. Now, I know you might, you know, penalties may or may not be a lottery, but he is our most inexperienced player. And he is been assigned what arguably could be the most decisive penalty. It could be, you know, penalty number three could be the most decisive from before. Even after him, he could have been, you know, if he was sixth taker, it'd have been just as equally decisive. But I don't know, do you think that the order should have been slightly different to protect him? Or actually, you know what, he's a professional footballer and he stood up and he's, you know, stood up being counted.
I think you're right. I think the two most important penalties in this year are the first one and the fifth one. And so they because they bookend the whole thing, but it shows cojones and Bottle that he's got up and done it. But I think a lot of us were not sure who was going to take that fifth one, and Kilman's done it in the past. Samedo's taken penalties as well. There's not a clear person who's going to be there. So to have somebody who's, you know, so young, who's, you know, he volunteered to take it. So it shows his personality is such that he backed himself to score it. So I don't see him being a problem. Okay, it wasn't the greatest penalty. It was a very good height for Henderson. But There's plenty of other people in the squad, like Samedo and Kilman and people like that, who've taken penalties and fucked it up in the past. So I don't really mind somebody else giving it a go and missing, because there's not many people in the world who could stand there and say, oh yeah, I'm guaranteed I'm going to score this. There's not many just Latans and Balotellis in the world who are going to put 99 out of 100 penalties away. So you got to give props to the guys to saying, oh yeah, I'll give it a go.
I think, I think the question that I had coming away from it was, Lopetegui took Jimenez off with about 15 minutes left when penalties were looming. And I did think at the time, I thought, well, that's one penalty taker gone, going off. Mm-hmm. You know, this game's in the balance. And my namesake there on the YouTube comments saying something similar, that, I saw him go off. I think he was about 15 minutes left, maybe 10 minutes left.
He brought on Adama on the 75th minute, where you're completely right that I'd have found Adama from the spot kit a fascinating watch.
I know.
That's how weird. Like, you know, voyeuristic is the only way I could describe my feelings towards watching Adama Traoré, because he doesn't take set pieces. Like,
you can't dribble it into the goal from a penalty, Rich.
Yeah. Like, have you ever seen Adama kick a ball from a stand, like, with a ball at a standing position like that? This is where someone's going to, like, show me clips of him scoring penalties, isn't it? It's like watching Peter Crouch score have a penalty. It just looks wrong. But you're right. Why not just keep 15 minutes left of the game? Adama didn't really make an impact on it. It didn't impact the formation shift too much, because we had Kuna there. Give him the 90 and we've got one of the best ball penalty takers of, you know, 21st century on.
What I will say with Hodge is that, obviously, as Jeffo said, you know, he's put his hand up. They were looking for a number five. He's had the bollocks to say, right, I'll take that. Now, none of us have saw Hodge, unless you can tell me otherwise, none of us have saw Hodge take a penalty before. So I don't know how good he is at it or not. So he must have been backed to do it. Like I say, I was wondering at the time who else on the pitch is left to take one, or who could, like your Kilmers and Traore, etc. But that being said, to be honest, I've got to be honest, when it was him stepping up, I wasn't confident at all. I could just see the post-match comments now about, you know, oh, this he'll learn from this, he'll grow from this, he's young, blah blah blah. I could just see all the comments and all in what Wolves WhatsApp chat groups up and down the land. I could just foresee it all when he was stepping up. And he had an element of like a simplistic penalty about it. Just run up and hit it hard to your left as you're looking. I think it was like a penalty that was quite easily read. Oh, there you go. Abby Jarvis has said that he has taken pens for number 23s before. So there you go. He must have history. He must have some skill about taking penalties if we've agreed to trust him with the fifth penalty in the shootout. It's just that, you know, probably the majority of Wolves fans have not seen him take one before. So it's unfortunate for him. I'm sure, you know, it's a bit of a cliche alert, but I'm sure he will learn from it and grow. But, like I say, it was just one of the missed opportunity for us, really.
Yeah, and I definitely don't think it should be held against him. You say, like, I think for any player to stand up in a shootout, it takes a lot, especially for a younger player. And you say, well, who's left? Adama Traoré, who would you penalty take? Maybe not. I mean, you're looking at your defenders, of which you got Kilman and Johnny, maybe. I don't know. And Semedo's quite senior players. But as we've got another YouTube comment, big thanks to everyone who's joined in live. Even if Kilman had taken the fifth penalty, Hodge would have to go in the next couple with more stress and pressure. And I get it. And there's no right solution. And I think I've just rationalised it in my head now that I just feel bad. I just feel bad for him, because he's had a bit of a break. He's had his breakthrough season with us. And you just don't want to see it from any player. Like, I can cope with Neves in a way missing a penalty. And I understand it, but for him, it was tricky. But the only incident we've not covered, and I wanted to end the section with it, is because I've had pelters from it throughout the day, was the penalty incident. Now, I can understand why it wasn't given. I'm not saying, I personally think if I was a ref, I probably would have given it. But do you guys all think that, yes, it was a penalty, it's a stonewaller, and I'm a secret Notts Forest fan?
I think you're right in saying you can see why it's not given, but it is a penalty. I think, does anyone disagree with that? I think it is a penalty.
I think it's a penalty, yeah.
I'm not disagreeing with that at all. I want to say the floor's yours, Rich. Justify it.
Yeah. How long you got?
Well, as he unfurls his Forest scarf.
I was going to say, people are going to make comments now. No, so at the time, initially, like when I first saw it, like you see his boot come off. So it's like, well, clearly, yeah, he's made contact because his boots come flying off. I did find it amazing seeing the series of like Ruben Neves literally like presenting this boot to the ref, being like, how's it not happened? For me, I think that Matthijs has tried to buy that penalty by shielding, well, essentially attempting to shield the ball. But what he's done, in my opinion, is he's actually moved in towards the player and actually away from the trajectory of the ball. So the ball's going away from goal. The player, the Forest player's kind of running towards his own goal in a way, or towards that side. And Matthijs rotates his body, but he rotates it into the path of the Forest defender, which isn't actually technically shielding the ball, because he's, if he'd have done that, he'd have taken the step inside to then collect it, which is why I think he's initiated that contact. Now, I do think if that's on the, I don't know, like on your own byline, I think it gets given as a foul every day for a week. But I don't know. I can kind of see from like the reverse angle why the ref, who is 5 yards away from it, who has a pretty fucking good view on it, has felt that Matthijs has drawn in the foul to too much of a degree.
I don't think that makes it less of a penalty, though, does it? I think there's that phrase, like playing for penalties. And I never really like the argument of, well, if it's a foul elsewhere on the pitch, but not in the area, that's just not right. If it's a foul, it's a foul. It doesn't matter where it is. It reminds me very much of, do you remember the Mahrez one in the 3-2 that we had against City? That was given on VAR eventually, wasn't it? But it was very, very similar. Like there was contact, minimal contact, but contact nonetheless. But for me, it's contact in the box and the guy hasn't won the ball, so it's not a penalty.
It's clumsy, isn't it? It's clumsy, yeah, from the Forest player. And like you say, I don't buy the, if it's a foul on another part of the pitch, it's a foul if it's a foul, like you say. And I think the acid test of it was so many fans of other football clubs are saying that it's a penalty, Stonewall penalty. I think if when you get people from clubs who shouldn't give a shit about what happens against us are saying it's Stonewall, then I'd say it's pretty clear cut. But it's one of those. I don't want to be conspiracy club like Stu about the cabal and upsetting the referees, but. You know, there is that thought in the back of the head that makes me think, ooh, after the Liverpool game.
No, because all Stu would have said is after Liverpool, not necessarily that one. I actually think it should have been given as a penalty, but I understand why I think the easiest way I can say it is, if we're saying that Matthijs tried to buy the penalty, by the very nature of that phrase, he hasn't. Like it is a foul because he's had to anticipate it, but I still think it's a stone. I still think it should be a penalty. But if we were given, let's say, a lighter one, we were given, I don't know, a soft hand ball, we're saying, oh, that's just for refs, that's for cabal, that's for corrupt cabal making up for Liverpool.
I only just wanted to get that phrase in there because it was so much in a couple of letters to
use. The word cabal, it should be used more, but yeah, I don't know. I can sort of see it, and it might just be me being like, the ref is literally, I've looked at the replay of it, he is like 6 yards away from it. So the ref's obviously seeing something apart from, you know, the pound signs in his bank account.
We were creating the rather humorous sight of both Neves and, probably Nunes and Cunha at some point running in all different directions towards linesman and ref, holding either part of a boot or a shin pad or something, just running all in separate directions in a vain attempt to try and get a penalty.
One thing I find interesting, because obviously it was tipping it down, right? But Mateus's foot's going to be soaking. He's got to be careful about athlete's foot, in my opinion. You know, does he hop? Because I think watching a professional footballer hop across the pitch to protest nullifies the point of a pro. Like, I think it kind of overshadows what you're protesting if you're having to do it on one leg. So I admire him for carrying on. But we'll take 30 seconds. And we'll have a quick break before we talk a little bit about transfers and talk a little bit about West Ham as well. We'll see you in just a second. Hello, welcome back, everybody. So, it's not been confirmed yet, but it feels like it's about to be. But Wolves look set to sign Mario Lemina from Nice. I think it's a very good, astute signing. It's been talked about it being a 4.5-year deal, which I find bonkers considering I think he's 29 and he's only played over 30 league games in one season, which was last season. He ticks all the boxes in terms of the play we need to bring in, would you say, Tom?
I think so, yeah. I think he's had a bit of a, from what I read the bits and pieces, he's had a bit of a career resurgence, I think, in Nice. The fans seem to love him and he seems to be almost reaching that potential that we spoke about so much when he was in his younger days at Juventus. So high energy, so he ticks that box, which seems to like to be the key attribute that Lopetegui's after. Quite dynamic, we're in need of another body in there, aren't we? And I think, you know, we spoke about at the start of the window there, they were looking for players with Premier League experience. So again, that's another box ticked. So yeah, I'm all for it. It sounds like it's as good as done, pretty much. I think he said his goodbyes at Nice, and obviously he's not going to be ready for the weekend, but probably not long after that. Maybe even the cup game if he's eligible. I don't know if he's eligible if he wasn't registered before the first leg, but you know the initial game. But who knows? But yeah, I don't think it'll be long before we see him.
Yeah, Trevor, I know you're a fan of both French and Italian football, which is where he spent predominantly most of his career via Juve and Marseille, as well as Nice at the moment. Seems to be a really, I guess, we've got Neves and Moutinho have quite similar games. Could you say that Mateus and Lemina have similar games in terms of how they play to kind of hopefully relieve a bit of pressure off Mateus at times, or do we think he's a whole of a kettle of fish?
I think so. There's somewhat. I think there's a lot of comparisons between Nunes and Lemina. I think Lemina's probably more of a hybrid between Traore and Nunes. I think he's that engine room. He can carry the ball, but he's not quite as polished and refined like Nunes is. Nunes is, you know, a 30-year-old bottle of scotch. You know, he's smooth, he's classy, he's crisp. But Lemina is a bit more of a workhorse. You know, it was an interesting one when he was first linked. I thought when he was at Southampton, I thought he did well for the first five or six games, and then he kind of just disappeared. And I think there was questions about his attitude and whether he wanted to be at a club like that. You know, for someone who at the early part of his career showed great potential and you know, Tom mentioned about his time at Juventus. And when he was at Juve, he looked like a player who was going to break onto the scene, and it kind of all just went a bit damp with him when they were changing managers and he lost his place in the team and he wasn't getting picked. So he was always one that seemed a bit bitter that he was playing for a club who wasn't a Champions League club and wasn't in Europe. But, you know, if he has had this, like he's shown at Nice with this renaissance in the back end of his career, then hopefully we're going to have a player who can be useful in and around the squad. And especially with Traore being out for a couple of months, you know, we need somebody who's going to be able to do the dirty work and be involved in crunch games, because, you know, might know ifs, ands or buts about it. We're still in a fight, and you know, we're still in the bottom three. We're going to need players who are going to want to roll their sleeves up and help us get out of that situation. And he's somebody who's done it with Southampton in the past. And, you know, unfortunately, he wasn't able to do it with Fulham. But, you know, he's someone who's been in and around these relegation fights before. And I think the key thing is that they want somebody who's got, like you say, Premier League experience. And he's got probably 60, 80 games in the Prem. So yeah, it's something that's going to hold us in good stead, hopefully.
Yeah, I was surprised with how long he was actually... Well, he was actually a registered Southampton player for, to be fair, because he was there for a few seasons in the end. I think he was there for what was technically sort of three seasons spent, a couple of years out on loan, but one of them was to Fulham. I say, for me, he's, if nothing else, he's relieving the legs of the likes of Moutinho, Neves and Mateus, while still hopefully giving us that bit of energy. And you're right, he's sort of rekindled his career a bit, because I think there was, I guess, a point of him potentially becoming a bit of a journeyman if he wasn't careful. And kind of, let's say, but my margin fact is he had a spell out in Turkey, which can sometimes be, you know, where, you know, journeyman footballers start the latter half of their career, and, you know, he'd have kind of gone that way. But hopefully he gives Wolves what we need. Not sure if he will sign in time for us. The game on Saturday, which is against West Ham. West Ham, I think, have quietly, guys, gone under the radar, in my opinion, about how poor they've truly been this season. I was going to say, you know how poor they've been, because if Wolves actually beat them on Saturday, we'll go 2 points ahead of them. They're only a couple of points ahead of us in the league. They're just above the relegation zone on 15 points, and just it's all kind of gone wrong for them this season, I guess, in the same way it's gone wrong for us just slightly further on from last season.
They've had a bit of a fall from grace, really. I mean, I was checking out some of their player stats earlier, and they sit in the league anyway. They seem to be having similar woes to us as regards to scoring goals. They're not getting any goals whatsoever. So, looking at it here, I think they've got two players who on three goals in the league anyway as their top scorers, and that's like Wolves' levels of inability to score goals. That is, so it's obviously a bit of a come down, because last season they were like the outsiders trying to get into the top four, weren't they? Suchek was firing, Antonio, obviously we've been linked with, was firing. Benrahma was obviously a great player who they had either off the bench or starting, so they had good options. And I don't know whether some players have had their heads turned and want to move on now. I'm probably looking at you there, Declan Rice, with that. You know, he's obviously wants to move on from them now, or whether like Moyes has maybe overachieved a little bit in the time since he's been there, because I know when he rejoined West Ham, everyone was at a bit of a moment, because I can't remember his first stint there wasn't exactly covered in glory, but I didn't think that they would tail off this quickly and like be down scrapping it out with us at the bottom of the table. So yeah, it makes for an interesting game, really, to be honest, because I mean I wouldn't have put West Ham down in this position, you know, pre-season when we're looking at squads and how teams might fare. That being said, you know, despite what's happened in the last couple of games, I'm going into it quite confident, to be honest. I think that'd obviously be a bit more rotation from us on Saturday, and moving players about, keeping the squad fresh with minutes. But I think we can capitalise. We've just put there up on the graphic for the YouTube viewers that their away form is absolutely fucking shocking. So yeah, nine, there you go. So up on screen there, they've played nine games away from home, only won one of them and lost six of them. So they're there to be got at. They're there. They're certainly in dire straits form-wise. They don't seem to be scoring goals. All points for a West Ham win.
I was going to say, you're ticking all the wondrous boxes, aren't you there? Jafo, what are you thinking in terms of starting lineups? I know we've talked about Kuna. We think he should, in all our probably humble opinions, he should be starting. But what are you thinking in terms of some of the other players?
I think it's a difficult one, actually. I think Totti Gomez actually has played his way into potentially getting a start. And I think, I don't know whether the other guys will agree with me, but I think if anyone drops out, it's going to be Kilman. And I think we could see, you know, we've got to go back to a back four against West Ham. We need to get at him at home.
Yeah.
So I'd probably say Bueno, Toti, Collins and Tomato. And then across, then I'd like to potentially see Nunes, Neves. And I'd like to see Cunha behind Costa and then Pedence and Huang. And I think that'd probably be our strongest team. Whether he's got quite got it to play them, play Cunha in behind in sort of like a number 10 role, no, I'm not sure, but that's where I see him being the most effective behind Diego to hold the ball up. But yeah, I think he pretty much picks itself. I think there's a couple of key areas, like sort of that guy who's going to play the 10, and I think the centre-backs would be where I'd look. I think Kilman's had okay season. I think a lot of people talk about Collins, about, oh yeah, he makes mistakes, but fuck me, for the age he is, he's class. And I think we're starting to see it now, and I think he's polishing game on game. He's becoming this more finished, polished footballer, and you can see why he was linked with big clubs last summer, because you can see his quality shining through.
Yeah, he seems to be someone who definitely under Lopetegui, his game's kicked up a notch. And, you know, whether that's form or development aspect, who knows? But you can't necessarily say the same thing about Kilman, whose form had dipped and is not quite recovered at the same pace as Kilman's. I was going to say, I almost dread to ask, but what were we all thinking score-wise for the game? Were we all feeling pretty confident?
Yeah, I'm cautiously optimistic. Yeah, I mean, we've only lost one game under Lopetegui in theory. I know we sort of lost last night, but you know, it was a draw in 90 minutes. So I think he's made us hard to beat again, which was definitely not the case before his arrival. We looked like we were just ready to roll over at any possible moment. So we're a lot more steely now. So we definitely haven't got anything to fear, you know, so just purely based on West Ham's record. Although it would be typical Wolves just to give a team a leg up when they need it. But I'm going to go 2-0.
2-0. Pricey, how about you?
Yeah, same as Tom. I think we'll find air shooting boots on Saturday. I think we'll win 2-0 as well. I just think the stats just show that you know, they're struggling to score. We've improved since Lopetegui's come in. If we can hit upon the right balance up front, and I think, as we've said before, I think Cunha does need to start now. If he does, then I think we can make it a bit more comfortable for ourselves. As we mentioned at towards the start of the show, we're starting to see the real Nunes now. The real Nunes has stood up. I think he's going to start really commanding games a bit more now. If he's got Neves behind him and we've got Nunes with him, then those two are the dream ticket in midfield, because, you know, Moutinho is just not really affecting games anymore. Sadly, he's not having the desired effect. So I think if we can play, you know, the team that we just mentioned earlier, then I think we've got a good chance of winning. So yeah, I'm thinking a 2-0 as well.
Very nice. Jaffo, what's your scores?
A little bit tight. I'd probably go 2-1. I don't see us keeping the clean sheet against them. I think it's just going to be a really nervy game. And that'll probably end up with them getting at least one. So
yeah, I'm going to go 1-0 Wolves. Same line, but I reckon we'll shut them out. That will be, of course, unless we sign Mikel Antonio as well. But say, we seem to be linked with a lot of West Ham players at the moment, which I don't find a bit fascinating. I think it screams agents for me, but I don't know if that's my... If Stu can have cabal of referees, I think seeing multiple players linked to your club always strikes me as funny. A couple of fixtures we've got coming up this weekend across the league. Some really good standout ones, to be honest. You know, we usually can't go, oh, what's your highlight? We've got the United Derby, we've got the North London Derby, and there's also a big game, a couple of big games down the bottom as well, because we've got Everton, Southampton, Forest, Leicester as well, and also Brentford versus Bournemouth. Out of all of them, though, which ones are we really looking forward to, either from, I guess, a quality standpoint or from helping ourselves out?
I think the Manchester Derby could actually be a tight one for a change. I mean, it's not been as in recent years, really. You know, we've always been expecting City to wipe the floor, but Ten Hag seems to be starting to implement his ideas a bit more now. They've got that sort of steel about them again. I think we need City to win, because I think if United beat them, they're going to have their tails up and they'll want to absolutely wipe the floor with us when they play us in the following game. So I think we could do with a City win there, although I think it'll be a good watch. So many games down the bottom, isn't there? Everyone's playing each other. It's going to be interesting. It'll be interesting, that Southampton-Everton game. I think if Everton lose, I think that might be Lampard's last game. That could go either way. It's going to be an interesting weekend, put it that way.
Looks like a big weekend for me. We'll round up with one question from Twitter Corner. Big thanks to everyone who's been watching along tonight and also listening on podcasts. Okay, so a question from Stu, and he says, since I brought out this great piece by Scratch Fine Arts on the show, on our last show, if you could have artwork of any Wolves player, past or present, who would it be and why? I'm just going to go for my one, which I think I might just try and get framed, but it's got to be Nwadiko versus Walsall. I mean, as iconic photos go, I think it's up there. I know people are probably going to say Neves or Toti Gomez because he's a good-looking boy, but that's mine.
Mine are a little bit older, probably. I want one with Ludovic Polo strapped up with a bandage.
Brilliant.
Or Vio Ganea diving into the crowd when he got that second booking. I just want either of those.
Yeah.
You're going to have Ewan Roberts with the bandage on his head, no teeth, beaming away. You've got to have, that's definitely above the fireplace, that one.
I've got a few. I've got a Cody one. I've got a Cody one, a Jimenez one, Neves one. I'd have that Bully. You know, Bully, when he had that shirt on underneath and it had 4-2 and 2-0 or something like that. And I think he had something like pack up your baggies on it. It was the Owen Roberts season, and I think it was the following game when he scored and he put his shirt over his head and exposed that. So that's,
you know,
yeah,
what,
that'd be up there.
You know what fine piece of artwork I would love to have in the house, Wolves related? I'd love someone to do me like an oil painting of the moment that fan dived into the Wigan fans.
Yeah.
I'd love to have someone, maybe Louise Cobbold, could do us like a really nice watercolour painting of the moment of him launching himself into all that pack of stewards and Wigan fans.
That'd be great. Oh, that'd be perfect. Does anyone actually know who that fan was? I'm just thinking that'd be a great story from the past.
I don't know. He's gone down in legend, hasn't he?
Yeah, just gone down in like folklore, isn't it? But we will be back on Sunday evening to talk about the West Ham game and also to preview the Liverpool Cup replay as well. I was going to say, it only feels like yesterday since we played them. But big thank you to everyone who's tuned in once again. We appreciate and love your support and engagement as always. Shout outs to 90 Min Network as well. Make sure you keep up with all things Wolves Fancast at Wolves Fancast on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram and YouTube. And until next time, it's goodbye from Jaffo.
Good night, Wolves fans.
It's goodbye from Tom.
Bye all.
It's goodbye from Adam.
Adios.
And it's goodbye from me. up the Forest. Wait, no, up the Wolves, up the Wolves. Cut the feed.